You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.
Start with this little case scenario. Pastor Jones has called a biblical counseling friend, Robert Alexander, with this question. He says, "Robert, you know I've moved to Aliceville about 6 months ago to this pastorate." He said, "I've become aware that there are probably 16, maybe 18 families in my congregation with live-in parents. Can you help me prepare to augment my ministry to care for these families and this crop of elderly folk effectively and efficiently?" Now, I want to tell you, we go to the 8 o'clock service at our church. Our church is 4,000 Presbyterians and 1,000 Baptists that attend because they can't quite go with the sprinkling baptism. So, but they like the teaching, so they come. So we have about 5,000 people we deal with. We go to that morning service, and we look out across that morning service, and probably, what, Pam, two-thirds look like us? And the rest, interestingly enough, the rest are on the other end of the spectrum. A lot of them, young singles, are newly married, but not ones with the children. They come to the 11 o'clock service. But you go to the 11 o'clock service, you still see a lot of this. Okay? Churches are aging. Now, you see some of the progressive churches, and they got a lot of the young people because they got the big band and all the things that go along with it. But you go to the so to speak, the mainline, I don't mean Presbyterian, I don't mean denominationally, I mean mainline in terms of the church has been around, and you're going to see a lot of gray heads. There are a lot of people reaching that point in life. So we have this fellow asking the counselor. The counselor in turn responds and says, "Thank you for thinking of me. I guess you remember I did a program in gerontology at one time at your alma mater. So I'll be glad to give you some assistance. Let's meet for lunch, and we'll look at about to be lost generation," as he put it. He said, "They offer a unique ministry, even evangelism. So why don't we get together for an extended lunch?" So Pastor Max, and meets with them and talks about it, and they say, "You know, we really are not alone. As all of us pastors have this to face. And I would say to you as biblical counselors, you have this to face. Partly because I have written on it and partly because I've spoken on it, I get calls on it, probably more than the average person does. But I probably average one case, at least a quarter, of people calling me and saying, we need help with our mom. We need help. In fact, just 2 weeks ago, I had a call from a fellow, and he said, "My brother and I'd like to meet with you." I said, "Okay." He said, "We got a mom we can't convince to move. One of them's a university professor. The other one is an accountant and a businessman in town." So they come and we meet together. We spent an hour and a half just kind of saying, "Okay, tell me about your mom. Tell me about her personality. Tell me about how she responds to things," in order to help them kind of craft a way to talk to her the next morning when they were driving to her town to meet with her. That's not unusual. So those are the kind of things that are out there and we have to deal with. I put some comical things along the way here that I stumbled into. Aging seems to be the only available way to live a long life. Okay. Disabilities always present unique ministry opportunities. So it's a much overlooked place for biblical counselors a lot of times because we just don't think about that. So in this workshop, I'm going to look at three things that can help you think about how we prepare for this. Preparing the counselor, that's you. Preparing the counselee, and yes, these people, you have to prepare the counselee how to think and talk about these things. And then preparing the church. What disabilities commonly occur with aging? Crippling disease, like Parkinson's. My wife's dad developed Parkinson's when he was about 81, 82, something like that. And he lived through his 87. It finally took him about 87. He progressively became more and more dependent on his wife. Bless that lady's heart. She would get that man out of bed, get him cleaned up, get him into a wheelchair, take him out the house, get him into a car, take him to church, take him to the doctor's appointment. And we're talking, she was in her 80s. So that's one. Physical limitations, loss of hearing, loss of sight. My friend's father had a stroke, and as a result of the stroke, he went blind. Interestingly enough, that finally brought in the Lord when he was 90. Then there's mobility challenges, balance, and muscle control. I told my wife recently, I said, I have to start going to a gym and hire a trainer. Because I can tell I don't have the muscle control and ability, and I don't want to become the old guy that can't get around. But I got to have a trainer that can teach me what to do because I have no idea what to do. And then you need memory challenges, dementia, and Alzheimer's. My wife and I lived with that with my daddy. My daddy had Alzheimer's for the last 7 years of his life. And my mother and my dad lived with us. My mother died after 5, and my dad had my dad almost 7 more. And my wife, as she says, when we do seminars, she said she became a geriatric nurse overnight without training. And then you have behavioral challenges, an unwillingness to adapt, a development of anger, belligerence. Yeah, sometimes that happens. And then you got emotional challenges, which is another form of the behavior, explosive anger. So those are all things that show up. And obviously, they follow a trajectory. The older you get, the more likely you are to have one of them. So I cherry-pick statistics to highlight the opportunities. Mobility is the most common disability among older Americans. Those are things we can easily help people figure out a way to deal with. But as he was saying tonight, one of the things that is a real challenge is getting people to realize that God hasn't abandoned them when all of a sudden they can't function the way they think they should function. They lose sight of God's goodness, and all they focus on is the disability. And then nearly 40% of people aged 65 and older had at least one disability, according to the U.S. Census. More than one-third of those 85 and older with a disability lived alone. Does that ring opportunity? About 13% of older household population with disability live in poverty. I hear another bell ringing, opportunity. More than one-third of those 85 and older with a disability lived alone compared to one-fourth of those aged 65 to 74. And again, that's just pure logic. The older you get, the more likely your spouse dies off. Disability rates were lower for married and older and older people than for those widowed or in categories of marital status, other categories of marital status. So being married is a good deal. It helps you age better. You can live to be 100 if you give up the things that make you want to live to be 100. So, preparing the counselor. How do you, as the counselor, prepare to work with these older people? I think first I'm going to tell you a little story about evangelism, just to kind of set your mind to think this way as we walk through these other things. 1993, I took a pastorate of a smaller church. I needed to rest, so I decided if the Lord would open the door, I'd go to a smaller church for a while and stop doing 6,000 things at one time. And so we got there, and when I arrived, the senior elder came to me and said, "I have an assignment for you." I said, "Okay." He said, "You need to lead my mother-in-law to Christ." His mother-in-law, at that point, was 90. And she was a brilliant woman. She had been the first white woman, to be the principal of a mostly black school in Washington, D.C. So she was not a pushover. Well, they would bring her to church, and she had grown up in a very hardcore, works-oriented church background. So she did all those good works, felt pretty good about herself. They would bring her to church every Sunday. And so I decided, okay, I was glad he gave me the assignment. I'm not sure I'd have thought about it this way. Because he gave me the assignment, I really put myself into it. And I would go visit her either every Monday or every Tuesday. And we'd sit and talk 15, 20 minutes, and I'd have her tell me about her. And then after about 15, 20 minutes, I'd say, "Well, now, tell me, what did you hear in the sermon on Sunday?" And she's a pretty sharp woman. And she'd come back and she'd make an observation or two. I said, "That's great. I'm glad you're listening that well." And we'd pray and I'd go my way. Almost a year later, I showed up at church on Sunday morning early, and the elder was there waiting for me. Took me to a big bear hug. He said, "Mama came to my wife yesterday and said she wanted to trust Jesus." And I got to baptize a 91-year-old woman. And what, a year and a half later, she was being very agitated. In the hospital, she was being very agitated and almost belligerent at times. I suggested they put a boombox in her room, and most of you would know what a boombox is. Yeah. Some of my younger students, I have to tell them what that is. And we put on repetitive, so it just kept playing, and we just had hymns playing in the background. Well, my wife and I were there together, and the daughter and the two granddaughters were there, and we were on her bed, and we were praying. And in the background was playing "It Is Well With My Soul" when she expired. And I'll never forget that as long as I live. What an experience that was. Had another man in that church who was 72. We had been there about 3 months. His wife came to church, but he only came, I think he was there once in those 3 months. He was not a believer. I got word that his 35-year-old daughter dropped dead with an aneurysm. I told my wife, "We need to go to that funeral." So we went to another city. We went to the funeral, thinking we were just there enough to say we were here, wanted him and her to see us, had no other contribution to make. And as we were walking out to leave, one of the teenagers came up to me and said, his nickname was Tiny, and they said, "Tiny, we'd like you to go to the cemetery with him." So I got into Hearst and I went to the cemetery with him. And I've never heard anybody grieve like this guy. I mean, he was screaming at a level I can't even describe. And she was embarrassed. And I just reached over and I squeezed his knee and looked at her and I said, "It's okay. That's his grief. It's okay." We got back from that, and I went every week and visited that guy. I forget how long. But I'm going to tell you this, the first 6 weeks, he didn't say a word. She'd sitting down at a dining room table, and I'd come in and sit down, and I'd share a couple of verses of Scripture, lay my hand on his hand, and I'd pray for him, and I'd leave. And after about 6 weeks, he started asking a question here, asking a question there. And about a year later, I had the joy of baptizing him. He came to Christ. So I like to share those two stories when I do these kinds of seminars to give you hope that just because they're old and decrepit, they can still come to Jesus. But I think the key is you just have to talk to them and you have to listen to them. Just sit and listen to them. And actually, I have to thank my secular training for that in gerontology. They have a therapeutic technique they use called reminiscence. And I learned it there. Now, I put a Christian twist on it, but I learned it there. And I just found how many times those older people are willing if you demonstrate you really care. And that opens the door to evangelism. So don't miss that. And I think that's an important piece to prepare you as counselors to deal with these people. Biblical counseling training is essential. You're in ACBC track, you get through phase three, you're in solid foundation for dealing with the essentials. You have the essential training. I could put it better that way. You have the essential training to deal with the variety of sin issues that will occur. As Jay Adams once said, there are only so many ways to sin, but sinners can come up with 1,000 ways or 1,000 variations. That's not exactly a quote, but it's close to it. Your basic counseling training gave you the tools for the so many sins. But what your counselor training doesn't give you is the skills for how to understand the aging people and how they function and the way their thinking is running or the way the family's thinking is sometimes running. And those are the kind of things I think you have to spend some time preparing yourself to think about how do I talk, just like I told you about that, those two brothers that came to me. Sitting down, first thing I did with them is, tell me about your mom. Tell me about how she's lived life. What's been important to her? How has she responded to things? Because those help me then help them craft a way of introducing the conversation to her in a way that she's going to be much likely to be receptive to what they're saying and not immediately put up defenses. And those things are skills you have to develop. Excuse me. Personal study of aging, I just mentioned reminiscence. One of the assignments I had in that program, I had to go interview three people that were 75 years of age, strangers. So there was a farmer who lived down the road from where we were living. I saw him sitting out on the porch. I just went over and I said, "Hey, I'm going over here to the university, and I've had this assignment. I wonder if you'd help me fulfill it. I'm supposed to sit and talk with you and let you tell me all about yourself." Well, that was like I kind of pulled string. Yeah. And the old boy just started talking. He was just open. He shared his life and his struggles and gave me a great opportunity to take it beyond that once it started. A reading program to conduct. I'm going to recommend to you on the next slide 5 essential books for you to if you're really interested in this arena, 5 essential books to read. And then periodic visits to the public or university libraries to pursue journals and related aging articles. And if you have a university anywhere around you, you can find some really useful, it's secular material, but these people have done a lot of research on the physiology of aging and the characteristics of those things, and they're good to educate yourself on and be aware. It's good to know some of the medical things that are out there you have to deal with. I have that book I mentioned, The Art of Aging. Virginia Morris, I don't know whether she's a Christian or not, be honest with you, but it's a really good little good book called How to Care for Aging Parents. Our good friend Jay Adams has one called Wrinkled But Not Ruined. Sharon Fish, Alzheimer's, Caring for Your Loved One and Caring for Yourself. And Pam, is it Ralph Davis? Yeah, Ralph Davis, My Journey into Alzheimer's. PC, Robert Davis, My Journey into Alzheimer's. That one's not up here. I just couldn't think of it at the time I was writing this. He was a PCA pastor, diagnosed with early stage Alzheimer's at age 50. Robert Davis. Yeah, Journey into Alzheimer's. And what they did, he and his wife wrote it together, and he cataloged his life and what was happening, and then she ended up finishing it up. And then the last one, I give you the reference to Johnny Erickson and Friends. You can look on Amazon. They have a lot of materials available, particularly, obviously, on the disability side. Okay. This training you do for ACBC, probably many of you, particularly those of you who are lay folks, you've probably done more reading in the last 2 years than you did in the rest of your life. Welcome to this world. You're going to be readers the rest of your life. Okay, and if you wander into this arena of working with OFA, you need to take the time to do the reading. You know, it's just essential. Attendance at training centers which focus on age-related medical issues, often presented by local hospitals. We live in Birmingham. Birmingham has a Class A. I don't know what those classifications are, but you understand what I'm trying to say when I say that. A Class A medical university in town. And we have a couple guys there in that university who go out and speak at gatherings to educate people. One of them is a psychiatrist who is excellent at diagnosing Alzheimer's things. Very good at it. I have a couple that we're friends, and then I worked with them counseling-wise, and then about maybe 5-6 years ago, they called me and they said, we need to come back and talk to you because we think maybe my wife is starting to develop Alzheimer's. So they came back and I met with them, and I said, look, I can't diagnose. That's out of, I don't have a medical license. I can't do that. But I said, I do see markers. So I want you to go see this guy down at UAB. And they did. And I'm glad they went to him because he is so good at it. He's pinpointed a certain type of Alzheimer's development. And it happens to be something that can be helped with medication. And so she's on that medication. We sat and talked with them at a banquet this summer. And now, we had a good conversation. If we went back 2 hours later, she probably wouldn't remember he had the good conversation. But in the presence, she can really be there. So if you have somebody like this, help them get to someplace where they can get a good medical diagnosis about a medical condition. Okay? And I would encourage you, look for these kind of seminars and take the time to public libraries put them on sometimes. The Alzheimer's Association will put them on sometimes. At our church, we have these luncheons about every 6 weeks for older people. And so we bring in these kind of people at those luncheons, just kind of try to help keep our population educated on various issues of this nature. So you have Alzheimer's, you have dementia, and Alzheimer's and dementia are not the same thing. They look alike, but they're not the same thing. Diabetes is a typical accelerated condition in aging, and it can bring other side effects with it, including how do I manage this? And then, believe it or not, sexual dysfunction is an issue. preparing the counselor, number three. Preparation resources, develop a referral list. If you don't have a counseling ministry, if you're in a church that has a counseling ministry, that's what you're doing. Lay people otherwise, if you're not running the thing and you're a lay person on that lay counseling staff, you need to encourage your director to begin to develop a referral notebook to have available when something comes up. When I was running a counseling center, we had a notebook. One section of it was just about aging issues. So our counselors could go get that notebook from our administrative gal and look up something for themselves so they could give their counselees a good referral if necessary. Then accruing examples of essential documents and examples of handouts. I know of a situation just recently where a gal with Alzheimer's was hospitalized for another condition, and she was on the edge of whether she was going to make it or not. And there were some real heroics done because she had no directives. And now they pulled her out of it, but now she's living in a very difficult situation for her and her husband. You can think about those things the way you want to. I'm just saying I think it's a good idea to have those documents in place so that something happens to you, your kids don't have a guilty conscience over the decisions they make. You make that decision. And boy, families like to pass that one along. Because I was in seminary when my aunt had a serious brain aneurysm, the rest of the family wanted me to make the decision. And I said, no, thank you. I told my aunt, I make that decision, I'm wrong. But I'm going to be wrong on the safe side. I'm not making a decision. Now, they meant well. They figured I was supposed to have all the ethical stuff solved and I should be able to tell them what to do. No, don't put that on, help people understand you don't put that burden on your children. Make that decision between you and the Lord. And then have it documented. And other simple things. A will. I was amazed just recently, reading again, and I don't remember the number, so I won't quite make one up. But this was a large number of Americans die without a will. That's like saying, Uncle Sam, let me make you a gift. You know? So help people understand this is a simple process and good stewardship. Some referral people in that referral list would be a gerontologist. And a gerontologist, many times that's a secular person, but what they do is they help you find the right kind of living options, things of that nature. It's kind of like a social worker that specializes in this arena of aging. And then there are elder lawyers. There are lawyers who practice elder law. Believe it or not, that's a specialty. And then there's a geriatric psychologist, and I told you about the one we know of. It's not a bad idea to know a judge, though I think that's going to be more the pastoral level. And then there's the Agency on Aging. That's a federal sponsored program that comes down through the states. And then there are other community resources and dependable nursing homes and geriatric Alzheimer's units. When I did my training in Georgia, there was only one organization in the Great Atlanta area that had a geriatrics Alzheimer's unit, and it was the Jewish Aging Center. They were the only ones that had it. Now, what you want to look for today is somebody's got to go into assisted living. What you want to look for is a place that has graduated entrance. So you go in to a nursing home where if you can't make it there, you can graduate to assisted living. And if you get Alzheimer's, you can graduate to the Alzheimer's unit. It's all in the same location with the same people. And you make the transition almost up the ladder. I think it's down the ladder. but it facilitates things for the family if you can have that kind of a possibility. Know you're getting old when you stoop to tie your shoelaces and wonder what else can you do while you're down there. Preparing the counselee and the family. Educating the counselee. My counseling experience includes likely more than the normal number of cases, as I mentioned earlier, regarding elderly parent issues. It's been my experience that most folks who come to seek help with an elderly parent or relative are not prepared to address the issues. And those issues include attitudes, awareness of the situation that's really going on, knowledge about what the possibilities or the options may be, and scriptural applications. And all of those things, if you finish phase 3 of ACBC, all of those you ought to be ready to handle. Likewise, most elderly are unaware of the meaning of their symptoms. Today, most folks are generally more familiar with the terms dementia and Alzheimer's, but few have any understanding beyond the fact that their loved one is confused. So you have to help them understand where they are and what they're dealing with. And then most counselees have no awareness of community resources, so it's essential to have that referral list in hand. Because guess what? You can't move them in the church and take care of them. But they have to go someplace. And they're going to be looking to you and me to help figure that out. Giving hope to the counselee and hope to the counselor. To a large degree, hope giving consists in helping the elderly person and those caring for the elderly to frame these issues in the context of a loving, sovereign God, as well as Christian living in enduring and increasing inconvenience. How do you frame it? You frame it with the character of God. Okay. I sat there and listened to Dale Knight. I think he actually kind of made my seminar for me. Because a lot of what he was saying are the essential rock bottom truth that you need in this arena. My wife and I, for years, did a family life seminar together. And after we did them for a couple of years, she came to me one day and said, "I'm going to change my first presentation." I said, "Okay, help me understand what you're going to do." She said, "I'm teaching these women how to submit and how to respond to their husbands." But she said, "They have no understanding of the God who told them they're supposed to do that." So she went back and she made her first session all about the character of God. A good methodology here is to tell the story that gives rise to the names of God, since stories picture reality and since stories tend to stick around. I don't know, Ivan, you may not have read through the Old Testament in quite a while. And if you're reading, maybe not thought about it very much. So just go get a little book on the names of God. A couple good ones around, although I don't have a title on the top of my head. There are a couple good ones around. Find one and just go back through it. It's a good review, and it's a good way to help people learn those various characteristics of God. Just go back and go through the story with them and help them see it. You know, when we travel, I don't have time to read novels. I got too many other things to read and do. But I like them. So when we travel, I listen to novels. Well, what I like about doing that is I don't count mile markers. Because I'm watching a movie the whole time I'm listening to that novel. The stories. My brain is wired for stories. Everything. I tell lots of illustration stories because my mind works that way. Okay, I'm not saying everybody's as story-oriented as I am, but most people have that category of capacity. And I think for older people, to help them get those pictures helps them grasp who God is. Draw upon what you've perfected in your everyday biblical counseling practice in order to deal with the anger, the bitterness, the fear, and the anxiety that come up. Nothing brings out sibling hurts like having to cooperate to care for aging parents. Attitudes. Helping counselees to come to grips with their own attitudes. Commonly seen in anger, terrible timing. I have 3 kids in school. Resentment, long fractured relationships. Fear, I don't know how to do this. Ask my wife about that. I still had to travel fairly often when my dad was going down fast. And more than once, the things happened when I was gone. Okay. And resistance. I don't want to do this. I don't have the funds to do this. Roles and responsibilities. Helping counselee come to grips with the biblical responsibility. What is the Christian responsibility? And what are God's promises and directions for elderly and the caregiver? And I've already been hinting at this, obviously, but the family dynamics. Who will take the lead in caring for mama? Who will administer the finances? And boy, there's no quicker way for somebody to embezzle money than in this situation. Who will make the medical decisions? And again, it's best to have the end-of-life documents in hand. Who will provide living space? Well, Mama can't come here and live here. I have three small children. We only have four bedrooms. But sis, you live there in town. I live in North Carolina. And the other brother lives in West Texas. Guess who gets to have Mama live with her? How will this family work through these issues? And here's one of those places where you as a counselor can really help people on a very practical level, is negotiating through your frame of reference and your biblical doctrine, all the various dimensions that you have in your training, help people to negotiate ways of handling these things. Do you have a monthly meeting? Do you have a weekly meeting? Do you have once a quarter you get the family together? Today you have no excuse living in West Texas and North Carolina because now you have Zoom. Okay? And so you can get them all on Zoom with you and help them talk to each other and bring to them. Let's say you have a Christian daughter and a younger Christian son, but an older son who's a prodigal. Okay? This is a great time to draw him into this process and help him see what it looks like for Christians to handle these things and be a witness to him. Even if he won't do much, keep him in the circle. Because it's an occasion to get the gospel to him and to demonstrate the gospel to him. And that's where you're different than the local gerontologist. Bedrock Theology 101. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Trust not your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct your path. I've come to the conclusion in the last year or so, outside of the gospel, that verse is probably one of the most important verses in the Bible. Now, in order to trust the Lord, you have to have some idea who he is. Okay? But when you trust the Lord, you are realizing you don't have the capacity to deal with this life issue on your own. It is a seeking and trusting the Lord is a step of humility. And I always loved Peter's 1 Peter 5:6. Humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. That's an implied choice. Okay? Trust in the Lord with all your heart. That's an implied choice. Choose to do so. And I like to translate it just a little bit differently. The way it's translated is accurate to the Hebrew. I'm not sure it's 100% accurate to the intent of the Hebrew. So I like to translate it this way. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. And don't trust yourself. And you walk down some of these pathways, and you know you need You know you need. You know you need Him to direct your path. When Pam's dad, he stayed home until, 2 months before he died? Daddy, 2 months before he died? Yeah, when he went to nursing home.
Oh, he was there 4 months because he had scotch blood and that's plaid. He was scotting. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and he realized that after 4 months that Medicare wouldn't pay for it, he'd have to start paying for it. So within 4 months he went to be with the Lord.
Now I had her tell you that. I actually had her tell you that because I know my wife, and I know that line, I know that humor, and I wanted to demonstrate something else to you. As she often says, people need to learn to have a sense of the ridiculous. Yeah, you know? And she does this. She's able to make you laugh when you want to cry. Now, that doesn't mean we don't cry, but she makes you laugh when you want to cry because she's able to say, underneath that is, God's really in control here and we can trust Him. Right? But in that process, he had a bed sore when we went in. After the bed sore healed, they called a meeting at the nursing home and they were going to make him go home. And I said, No. I'm going with you to that meeting. And so I went to the meeting with him, and there were two doctors and the administrator and a nurse sitting there, and my mother-in-law and my wife. And the administrator said, these are the reasons why he has to go home. I said, look, I'm a son-in-law, but I'm talking to you now as a gerontologist. Here are my credentials. I said, you send that man home to meet a narrowly prescribed rule, and you kill one of these ladies. You're not sending him home. And there are times when people need an advocate. In that point, I played the advocate. There are times when that's necessary because the system just isn't friendly sometimes. And just isn't reasonable sometimes. And it's not unchristian to stand up to those situations. You still trust in the Lord. You stand up. If he gets sent home then, okay, God's in control. But it doesn't mean I can't be the advocate and speak up to the issue. Adjustment, accepting and reordering life as from the hand of God. Submission of my will to His will. Priority of adjustment, schedules, living arrangement, transportation, mobility, all those things take graceful adapting. Inclusion of the elderly into your daily life cycle. My dad, he was funny at times. And the last couple years of his life, at Christmas time, my kids were, about 9 when he died, something like that. And, when my mom died. And after my mom died, we realized pretty quick Dad was much further down the road than we thought he was because Mom covered for him pretty well. Well, at Christmas time, I take some money and put it in his pocket, and I take Pop and my kids, and we go to a Christmas tree farm. And Pop and the kids pick the tree, not always the one I would have picked, but Pop and the kids pick the tree, and Pop paid for it, and Pop bought us hot chocolate, and he was smiles from here to here. We got home and put up the tree, and first time we did, go home and put up a tree. I said, Pop, what do you think of the tree you guys picked up? He said, I didn't pick that up. He had completely not remembered that he was there and did that. But in the moment, it brought him great joy. Okay? Dependence upon the Lord. My wife had dad, and I was out of town somewhere. And by that time, he got into a place where he was starting to be incontinent a good bit. And I said before I left, I thought, I'm so sorry I got to leave you with this babe, but I got to go. So she said, you went into our family room, and there was a door that went into the garage, and then you went over to the apartment where my pop was. My wife said she went over there and she leaned against that door and she said, now, Lord, I got to go do this. I need your help, or however her prayer was.
I can tell it. It's my story.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, tell it. Go ahead.
Go stand next to her so the microphone.
Yeah.
No, the thing was, is that it was a situation that had to be addressed. And he only knew me as the girl that comes in and cleans up all the time. He didn't even know who I was. And so I had to go in, give him a shower, the whole thing. And then I came back, and I came into our family room, and I stood there and leaned against the wall, and I said out loud, I said, God, that wasn't near as bad as I thought it was going to be. Because God gave me the grace to do it in the moment.
Yeah.
And that's where the Holy Spirit stepped up to the plate.
And sometimes family will give you a harder time, and you have to help people realize sometimes things will give you a hard time, and you have to figure out what to do with it, and you have to help coach them. And when we were going to move from Pennsylvania to Atlanta, and Pop was going to go with us, my Aunt Ida, who was the matriarch of that side of the family, we were over visiting, and she cornered Pam and was really testy with her. And Pam just gets a hold of her hands and won't let go. And she said, Aunt Ida, you need to understand, we're in the Lord's army, we're under command. When he says we need to move, we need to move. Pop's going with us, we're going to take care of him, and we're going to make sure you get to see him. All this time, Aunt Ida's trying to pull away. Yeah. So Pam let her go. And several weeks later, we were over in their part of the city. I said, let's stop by and see Uncle Charles and Aunt Ida. And Pam said, do we have to? But Aunt Ida hugged her and said, I love you. And I think it's the first time she's ever done that. So you treat the opposition with dignity. You don't scream at them. You don't rail at them. But you'll help them understand. And you're going to have to coach people to do that. Because I'm telling you, I don't care how godly people are, when they get into these kind of situations, the flesh side comes to the surface. I'm running out of time here, so let me hurry up. Preparing the church. Well, you got to have the funny. If I had known I was going to live this long, I'd taken better care of myself. Teaching the church. Let me just kind of run you through this quickly because I'm trying to get you out of here in a few minutes. Churches, I have observed the evangelical church is about 20 years behind on the age wave. We have been over the last 30 years. Help your church, as counselors, help your church get in the act. Let me just give you three examples of things that we've done over the years. One of them, I haven't done it. Our church has done it. But over the years, just to help you see the kind of things you can do. When we were in Miami, and my dad was probably the last 2 or 3 years of his life, I talked to some ladies, and they actually did it. We just talked about it. I actually told them, and they ran with a suggestion. They created what they called Tuesday Fours. That means they met on the fourth Tuesday of the month, and they called it Tuesday Fours. And it was designed with two purposes. One was to bring a group of elders together and get them interacting with each other. And the other was to give family a respite. And so we bring those elderly in at 9 in the morning and keep them till 1. And those gals had them playing games and singing songs and having lunch together, and they had a grand time. And my dad really liked it because there were more women than there were men. And he really enjoyed it. But it kept them busy. It gave them something to interact with. Then when I was in St. Louis and I was working on this book, I decided to try an experiment. So I went to the Christian school and I got a group of senior students to volunteer to help. And I had them once a month come to church for lunch. Don't bring a bag lunch. And come to lunch, and we want our senior citizens there, and we'll provide them a bag lunch. And then we had a pretty large conference kind of room, and I'd set up so it made a big table. And I put a senior high school kid and a senior citizen, senior high school kid, senior citizen, all around the table. And I told the kids, I said, now, you need to share something about your life with that senior, and you need to ask that senior to share something about their life with you. Well, the first time, it was awkward. But actually, the kids got into it, and they had fun with it. And the seniors reciprocated. It was a great exercise. And I was just trying to look for ways of helping the church, at the same time helping the young people at the school, and trying to precipitate the idea of that intergenerational interaction, which I don't think in our culture today we have near enough of. And then something our church, where we are now, started probably 20, 25 years ago now. In the Presbyterian Church in America, after a man reaches a certain age, he can request to become elder emeritus, which means he retains his title as an elder, but he no longer is responsible to serve on the session or in some other official capacity. Well, we started a group there. We call them the Jethro Council. So those guys become part of the Jethro Council. They get together once a month for a luncheon, where they talk spiritual things, share things with each other, but they also serve another function. When our session, which is our ruling body, is working on some kind of program or trying to figure out, are we going to run a financial campaign, something like that, they take their plan to the Jethro Council and run it by the Jethro Council and access that gathered wisdom of the years from those men. Now, I've noticed there's another positive to that, and that is the existence of that organization, and it talked about with fair frequency, is a constant reminder to the rest of the congregation that we value and honor age. And we need that too. That's that dignity of being human. You are still useful and worthwhile. Okay. Well, I got maybe a minute or two. I'll stop. And anybody have a question or two you'd like to ask? Or
I have a question. We have a situation. My somebody family faces a lot of the aging disabilities. That's result. I mean, I think there's the physical component of some dementia going on,
And there's the anger, and there's behavioral aggressive changes, a lot of suspicion. How do you balance in helping them the physical component with also the sin and confronting the sin given their physical condition? Because their sin has implications in the church. Because, like, they send out emails angry at the pastor over something to people and causes a lot of difficulty. And so how do you balance those things? It becomes a very difficult thing because when you confront them or deal with them gently and kindly, there's a lot of anger and there's a lot of not taking ownership of it. And yet it is sin that's happening.
Well, I would say, first of all, there, your first, given where you're telling me it is at this point, your first operation should be the elders, or whatever your ruling body you call them, deacons or elders, your ruling body ought to have a committee of their stature go to this man's home and meet with him, or go to this woman's home and meet with them. And then secondly, see whether or not the family has had the person evaluated exactly what this dementia is. Is it Alzheimer's, or what exactly is going on here? And then it may be that the family has to step in and limit the ability of that person to send those kinds of emails.
Yeah.
And some of those things are sticky, no doubt about it. But on the other side of the coin, it's not responsible to allow them to constantly be irresponsible.
Yeah.
Okay?
And if the family isn't willing to do that...
Pardon me?
And the family isn't willing, specifically the wife,
yeah,
covers.
Yeah.
And so they've had those meetings where they've dealt with stuff, and the wife will cover. I've been in some of them because I'm the pastor's wife. And you're sitting there and you're thinking, I've heard this person yell at you. I know that she'll say, oh, he never gets angry. And I'm thinking, I've heard him. I mean, you know, I've heard him, had him yell at me. So,
well, you're not necessarily going to control that. And some of that is sin, and some of it isn't sin.
Yeah.
Some of it is medical, and you can't... They literally don't have control of it at that point. Not because the Spirit of God is weak, but because the apparatus is no longer functioning correctly. Now, you need some medical help to help you evaluate what that level is. So I would say also there needs to be a really good medical evaluation. Come and call. Come and talk to me afterwards.
Okay,
anybody else have a question? I can go on that one for. Anybody else have a question?
This is real quick. It's not surprising that you recommended in your referral list to have an elder care attorney.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned a judge. Under what circumstances would you find a judge to be helpful?
Guardianship.
Yeah. If guardianship needs to be challenged, that'd be one way. Sometimes if it gets really sticky, sometimes you have to have some kind of legal paperwork done between family members. It can get ugly. Yeah.
You mentioned the referral list, and I'm sure there's obvious answers to what's going to be on it. Is there a comprehensive list that you would suggest finding for a referral list?
You'll find some of that in my book.
Okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I've got it all in there, but I do have it in there.
Okay.
Thank you all. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.